Good morning. We won't officially start yet. We don't have a quorum, but we can bring the first bill up, Representative Benson, House File 2327. Why don't we start the process, and we won't take any votes or amendments or anything, formal action, until we get a quorum.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
House File 2327 happens to deal with a felon, not voting, but hoping to mitigate the issues surrounding and permitting new conversations around notification and changing some penalty. I'm going to go through an overview of the different sections within the bill, and Secretary Ritchie is with me today. He's going to go through any of the technical questions that you may have surrounding the bill. Just some overview to begin with. This bill is the result or culmination of many months of deliberation in the Governor's Election Integrity Task Force. We heard a lot of testimony regarding procedures that we currently have and some failures in terms of being notification and prevention in terms of felon voting. Now, felon voting in terms of what we speak, of course, it's constitutional that if you're a felon and you haven't had your rights restored, you're not permitted to vote. And that's obvious if you're incarcerated, but we have around 50,000 felons who are in some kind of release program in the community. And how we help both protect the system, the election integrity, and also the felons from recommitting a felony, and then the cost of the state and cost of the individual and the like. So that's kind of the background of why it's a very bipartisan bill. As you can expect with Secretary Ritchie with me today, there's a whole lot of agency language that's committed here. Permitted, Chairman, I'll go through the individual bullets within this bill. First section, invalid registrations, a notice to the voter, requires the county auditor to notify a voter registration applicant of the applicant's need to reaffirm his or her eligibility to vote in writing. If the county auditor has a reason to believe the applicant is not eligible to vote based on records provided to the auditor by another public entity. So if the Secretary of State's office notifies the county of the fact that they're not the individual would have to come and you know, provide a document saying that their rights have been restored if they're going to challenge that.
Representative Benson, could we just bring it to order and take the official moving of the bill here? Okay, a quorum is present, I believe. I'll have Mr. Sparby take the roll.
Chairman Cornish?
Here.
Vice Chairman Woodard?
Here.
Representative Doubt? Representative Gauthier?
Here.
Representative Grunhagen?
Here.
Representative Hilty? Representative Johnson?
Yes.
Representative Kelly?
Here.
Representative Kiefer?
Here.
Representative Creasel? Representative Leidiger?
Here.
Representative Mariani? Representative McDonald?
Here.
Representative Moran?
Here.
Representative Nornes?
Here.
Representative Slocum? Representative Smith?
Okay, thank you. And Representative Gauthier, would you move the minutes of March 1st?
So move, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Representative Gauthier moves the minutes March 1st of the Public Safety and Crime Prevention Policy and Finance Committee. No objections or corrections. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, and now the chair will move House File 2327 be recommended to pass and move to state government finance. Okay, Representative Benson, go ahead. Sorry for the interruption.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Prohibitions, penalty, affirmation, defense modifies the criminal penalty for the ineligible individual who registers to vote but does not subsequently cast a ballot. In these cases, the penalty would become a misdemeanor offense if an ineligible individual registers to vote and subsequently does not cast a ballot. At the election, the felony penalty established by current law would continue to apply. This paragraph B of the section establishes an affirmative defense in the prosecution for registering to vote. While ineligible, the defense would be available if the accused individual requested to withdraw the registration prior to the criminal charges being filed and the individual did not vote at an election between time registration was submitted and the time it was withdrawn. Three, use of Department of Corrections data. Access to data subdivision 1 requires the Commissioner of Corrections to provide electronic data to the Secretary of State on individuals or on probation for felony offense that would result in the loss of civil rights, as indicated by the statewide supervision system. Secretary of State is required to use the data, this data to verify data contained in the statewide voter registration system and to direct the county auditors to make updates to voter records or contact the county attorney as appropriate. Data is already transmitted to the Secretary of State in this manner on individuals serving a felony sentence under the jurisdiction of the Commissioner of Corrections. The data transmitted would newly be required to include individuals' last known residential addresses that is not a correctional facility so that we can send out these notifications. Notice to affected individuals requires the Secretary of State to provide a written notice to, one, an individual on probation for a felony offense that would result in the loss of civil rights, that registering to vote or voting while on probation in itself is itself a felony offense and may result in the loss of probation status, and two, an individual has completed a term on a probation with no felony, new felony conviction, that the individual's right to vote has been restored. Subdivision 3, the use of the data prohibits the Secretary of State from using or disseminating data received under this section for any purpose other than those authorized in this section of the statute. Investigations and prosecutions. New law there requires that a law enforcement agency to promptly investigate an alleged violation of the laws governing voter registration upon being notified by affidavit of the allegation. This replaces the current mandate that the county attorney promptly investigate and present the matter to a grand jury with whatever evidence is found. We can speak to that if there's questions later, but the secretary could answer some of those also. Upon a determination of probable cause, the county attorney would be required to proceed in accordance with the standards regarding the prosecution function as established by the American Bar Association criminal justice system. I want to stop right there and say that yesterday it was brought to my attention by the Minnesota County Attorney Association that more pertinent language is contained in the National District Attorneys Association, the National Prosecution Standards, the third edition. I've not had enough time to thoroughly vet this. However, they may provide some testimony as to why. We have time, it will have to come out of the Senate, and we need to conference it to take a more thorough look at that and make a recommendation and do an amendment to add that. I want to make sure that whatever we incorporate in this is exactly what it will be taken in order to make sure that this really gets to what we're trying to get done in the changes to legislation. Okay, misdemeanor penalty and forfeiture of office for a county attorney who refuses or intentionally fails to faithfully perform the duties required by this section is eliminated. Delivery of ballots requires the Commissioner of Corrections to provide the Secretary of State with a list of names and mailing addresses for correctional facilities in which only persons convicted of felony offenses reside in Minnesota. And then, of course, absentee ballots applications received at one of these addresses must be rejected and a copy forwarded to the county attorney. Department of Corrections is required to institute procedures to ensure absentee ballots are not received or mailed by offenders in one of these facilities. Number six, unlawful voting penalty establishes that the signature of an affidavit on a polling place roster is prima facie evidence of the intent of that individual to vote at the election for purposes of criminal prosecution for unlawful voting. Currently, you have to approve intent when you go to court, and simply by stating that I didn't know is a valid defense in many of these cases. We want to establish in this law that there will be plenty of notifications. One of the things that didn't require to be in legislation is that the Secretary of State's office will provide signage at every polling place to alert felons who have not had their rights restored that they are not eligible to vote. And Secretary can comment on that also. But if they sign the roster, they are, in effect, saying, I'm aware of the fact that I can't vote, and they can be prosecuted for that. And that is a felony. Establishment statewide supervision system permits the Secretary of State to access adult data in the Department of Corrections statewide supervision system in conformity with the requirements established earlier in the bill. The last one, number 8, probation supervision, notice of loss of voting rights, requires an adult felons placed on probation supervision to be notified in writing that the individual may not register to vote or cast a ballot at an election during the period of felony supervision. The notice is required to be contained in the probation agreement and contained in the individual's probation file, and the individual must acknowledge by signature further evidence of their knowledge of their inability to write until their rights are restored, and a receipt of that notice. So they should keep that on them to make sure. I stand for questions, and Secretary of State Mark Ritchie is here to also aid in that.
Secretary of State Mark Ritchie, it's always good to see you, and thanks for taking time out. I imagine what is a busy schedule to appear here today.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman and committee members. I really appreciate this opportunity to just reinforce some of the points that Representative Benson made, but to also just give you a one-minute history of how we got here, because I also think that's important. Representative Benson mentioned that this last 12 months approximately, we've been meeting very often in our Election Integrity Task Force. Great leadership from our representatives from the legislature. This bill represents the interim report, so to speak, our halftime report, and very closely follows the work that we've done throughout that time. But the impetus came before, actually. Some of you remember that that you in the House passed House 5545 a few years ago. I think the vote was 118-9. It was a notification bill that got at some of these points, but not all of them. But it was an important effort, but it was a reflection of what we knew from the 2008 election, which is the young man up by the Canadian border who thought he was doing the right thing, thought he was being a good citizen, went and voted, but wasn't yet off his prison sentence, his probation at that time. The publicity about his case alerted the legislature to the need for better, more careful notification, but also for the ability to really have a way that prosecutors could definitively say, this person was notified, therefore we can use that in court. That case generated a lot of publicity about how the uninformed part of this needed to be addressed. The legislature addressed it. Did not get signed at that time, but it did help us to focus our discussions this last year onto this excellent group, kind of a comprehensive plan to address the notification, but also the ability to help our county attorneys complete their prosecutions if that's necessary. I want to express my gratitude to Representative Vincent for not just bringing this bill forward, but for his leadership in our Election Integrity Task Force, and I look forward to perhaps in a year coming back with other enhancements, but for now we think this will help us do a better job this year. And with that, I'll stand for any questions, and thank you again, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Secretary of State. And Representative Johnson has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I guess to the author, more comment than anything else. I don't necessarily have any problems with the bill. Seems like it's a way to get better information out to people that need it. But I spent a lot of years supervising folks on probation, felons, and the like. And I got to say, if you made a list of 100 things that they wanted to do after they got out of jail or prison, whatever, voting was like number 100. You know, so just the idea that what concerns me is the idea that there's a bunch of people out there, this notion, want to commit fraud on voting. It's just, in reality, that is just not the case. But having said that, you know, getting information out is good. If anything, I think from a criminal justice perspective and treatment perspective and getting people back involved in the community, we want people who have had a criminal past and have changed their ways to become engaged in the community and to to go to the voting booth and start voting. And I mean, obviously, once they're good and clear to vote, but that's the direction we want people to go, to become more engaged, be part of the community, and to be active citizens and not to be cast off and never be a part of the community again, because that's going to provide better public safety. So that's more a general comment to the bill than anything else.
Representative Benson?
I will allow for Secretary Ritchie to also respond to that, but and he can address that. Although it might be 100, and you're probably right, there's not as many as we might think, it still has been a major expense to counties in the prosecution of pretty high profile cases. So but some other studies in terms of showing in terms of felons and having their rights restored to vote it really speaks to re-empowering them. And so I might argue, in fact, that that they may say that it's 100, but I think studies have shown is that when they can vote and they're able to vote, they're kind of restored to the community in which they're living. So, but I'll let Secretary Ritchie.
Secretary of State, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, it's been at least 130 individuals whose lives have been turned upside down because they did vote as felons when they were not yet allowed. And so the cost to the county, of course, and there was incarceration, some were felony convictions, some were lowered to gross misdemeanor. But also the upside down, the young man in War Roads was a young man who went to prison young, and his whole story was, again, all over the papers, all over the state. And so whatever we can do in this moment under current law to make sure that nobody makes that mistake, if we can help it, and the law gives us also some ability to inform people when they are now eligible again. So I feel like our objective is to really stop that crazy expenditure of money and turning of lives upside down and wasting time of county prosecutor, all of that, and to then make sure that when people are eligible, that then we are making sure that they know that and they can incorporate into their lives. Our task force is only halfway done, and we've been talking in depth about some of the other ideas that are out there, and I look forward to this next year, and perhaps in a year from now we'll come back to you with some other ideas in that empowerment area. But for now, our objective is the same one that you guys had when you passed that bill, 114-9, which is get the word out in a way that's provable so that young people in particular, but all felons, don't make the mistake. And also we have the ability to prosecute in a relatively simplified manner to really stop this problem now and then take a look at where we might go in the future.
Okay, between questions here, if we could have Mr. Diebel address a portion of the bill here on page 3, starting with line 323, I think. Mr. Diebel?
Mr. Chair and members, this provision on page 3, line 23, requires the Secretary of State to provide notice to felons while on probation, and it states on 3.24 that notify the individual that registration or voting while on probation for the offense is a felony offense. And as drafted, actually, registration is only a misdemeanor offense. And it could be corrected in one of two ways. You could say registration and voting is a felony offense, or you could state registration and voting while on probation for the offense is itself a criminal offense. So there's a distinction as to whether the weight of a felony is important to be conveyed to the person on probation, or if it's more accurate to state that both are criminal offenses.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
Mr. Gearing came to me just before it and said that we needed as a technical correction to add the and. So I would make an oral amendment to add the and.
Would that do it, Mr. Diebel?
Mr. Chair and members, yes, that would be one way to accurately convey what the felony offense is.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Moran.
I would like to speak to that amendment because I think it's great, Mr. Chair. I got to acknowledge you.
Go ahead.
But I think it's going in the right direction to ensure that we're doing all that we can to notify ex-felons that they shouldn't vote and that that would be a felon if they vote. But I think I hear you saying if they register to vote, that would be a felony. Is that what I heard you want to amend this bill to say?
Mr. Deeble? You'd ask that again? Maybe you ask
You understood. Yes.
Mr. Chair, members, I believe the current law is that registration is a felony in itself, but under the proposed language, registering and not following through with a vote would simply be a misdemeanor.
Right.
And so they're actually lowering the offense if you don't follow through on your intent. So the change here would just make it clear that you have to do both registration and vote to be subject to a felony penalty.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Chair, if I could, I'd just state the amendment would then would be on page 3, line 24, you would delete or and insert and.
Okay, did you, Representative Smith, did you have a question on this amendment?
Mr. Chairman, yes, I do. I need additional clarification. A couple of questions. Right now, am I correct that the act of just registering is a criminal offense? Mr. Deeble?
Mr. Chair and members, yes.
Mr. Chairman, if the word and is inserted instead of or, then what happens if a person just registers and does not vote?
Mr. Deeble?
Mr. Chair and members, they would be still subject to a misdemeanor penalty under this proposal. This is just simply giving them notice that if they both register and vote, it's a felony. But the provision that states that registration without voting is a misdemeanor would still be in effect. And that's one of the reasons I mentioned that the alternate amendment would be to, on page 3, line 25, would be to delete felony and insert criminal offense. Because that would.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Deeble, changing the word or to and.
Representative Smith, I think I know what you're getting at. I think that I was wondering if we could take some time and write up a little longer amendment and correct both portions or make it clear that one is not the other. And would that be okay, Mr. Deeble? I mean, could you change it in two spots so that it was clear to a layman?
Mr. Chair, members, certainly we could spend some more time and it has another committee, so if
well, I mean, could we do it while we do the bill here? Or you write something up, and we'll come back to it as an amendment?
Yeah, Mr. Chair and members, I can consult with Mr. Agarian and Secretary of State.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, I might just say that that Mr. Agarian did approach me beforehand and believes that that is a remedy that makes it correct with the rest of the bill. So adding the and does make sure that we delineate the difference between just registering is a misdemeanor, but registering and voting is the felony charge.
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, Representative Smith.
If the word or was left as is, as bill currently is drafted, either registering or voting results in a felony charge. Changing the word or to and is not a technical change, it's a substantial change.
Yeah, I see what you mean. It says registering and voting would be the only. Mr. Deeble?
Mr. Chair and Representative Smith, this is just a notice provision. It doesn't change the substantive criminal provisions that are.
Well, Mr. Chairman, let me ask it in a different way. As the bill is currently drafted, I believe I'm correct in reading it to mean that registering or voting results in a felony. If you put the word and in, now registering, just registering, becomes a misdemeanor, not a felony.
Mr. Chair and members, current law is that registration without voting is a felony. Under this bill, the language actually changes that to state that if you register and you don't vote, it's only a misdemeanor. And so the proposed amendment would clarify to offenders who are on probation that you're not subject to a felony if you simply register. We want to make it clear that the threat of a felony is only applies when you register and vote.
And actually, what you're saying is the misdemeanor portion for registration is spelled out in another place of the bill, so and would fit it.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Gearing.
Mr. Gearing.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'm Matt Gearing from House Research. The proposed amendment, as Mr. Diebel described it, is just changing the text of the notice that the Secretary of State has to give to felons about their voting rights. So it's not changing the substance of the criminal penalty. As Mr. Diebel described it,
right,
with the changes in the bill, registering and not subsequently casting a ballot would be a misdemeanor offense, which is reduction from the current law, which provides that it's a felony. But this change that's being discussed right now doesn't change those changes, which are in a different section of the bill.
So, Mr. Gearing, then and instead of or would fix it?
Correct.
Okay. Representative Mariani, did you have?
No,
okay.
Mr. Chair, that's the clarification.
Okay. If there's no objection, the chair would offer the amendment on line 3.24, change the or to an and. Everybody understand that? Mr. Diebel, you've got that. Any objections or comments? Hearing none, all in favor of the chair's amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Now, Representative Gauthier had a question.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Benson, first of all, I'm glad to see on Section 8, on page 6, 6 line 12, that Representative Champion's long journey of trying to get notification is in your bill, so thank you for that. Well, I have a question or two for the Secretary of State. And Secretary of State, on a voter registration form, is there any place on that form that gives notice that if you are a convicted felon currently on probation or parole, you may be guilty of a felony if you vote?
Secretary Ritchie?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gauthier, you are signing an oath, and the oath has several affirmations. One of those affirmations that says that you're not currently a felon still serving your sentence, and I could get you a copy, I think, very quickly of the current voter registration form for you.
It is on the form. That's all I need to know.
Ma'am, you state your name and title and begin.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Beth Fraser with the Office of the Secretary of State. And the oath is specified in statute, if you want to look, 201.071. And it does say, the last part of the oath is that providing false information is a felony subject up to, I think, 5 years in prison or a $10,000 fine.
Thank you. And maybe if we highlight that somehow, we'll reduce convictions some way. So just a suggestion. Secretary of State on line 320 to the bill states that provided subdivision mail written notice at least 1 month prior. When I'm filling out a registration card that isn't same-day registration, when does that have to be in under current law? Because I know I can't do it the day before. They won't accept it.
Secretary?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gauthier, you can send it any time.
Okay.
But it's 20 days before is when
okay.
we think of as the cutoff time to be able to do all the processing. But you're correct. There's a time space there, a time lag.
Representative Gauthier?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My concern, Mr. Secretary, is a month isn't a whole lot of time, and I'm wondering also, and this is kind of an aside, and I guess it's my last comment or statement, is we know that both political parties do voter registration drive. We know the League of Women Voters does. Is there any plan by your department to educate people on this new legislation and bringing forth enhancement of to light about felonies? Because I just think we burn a lot of time convicting people for most of the time, I think, honest mistakes. As in Duluth just recently, we convicted somebody who was already in prison, which didn't make a whole heck of a lot of sense to me.
Secretary Rich?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gauthier. To your second question, we have very specific dollar amounts from our HAVA funds designated to the notification process. We're certainly working with all of our different partners and the stakeholders in this. But I want to go to your first question because you point out one aspect of this, which is in the process of notification, there is the signage, the letters, the word of mouth from correction officials. But the most important tool that probably our office has is that we are working in this bill towards the ability to get on a very, very often as we can, the information from the courts, but especially from corrections, about who has entered this period of being ineligible to vote, and also who has now become eligible because they're off, and being able to mark it in the poll book records so that if an individual comes in, to the extent that we can, relatively near the election, get that mark, we can handle some of the notification thing that, let's say, maybe the letter didn't get there or the signage didn't work. But the other part of that for us is that we have been, in this past year's dialogue in the Election Integrity Task Force, really sorting out how complicated and how complex the system is, where is the best list, and how can we make that list available. We know that if somebody is convicted of a felony on that Monday, that they're not going to yet be in our database, but they're probably not thinking about voting the next day. They're probably, you know, going off someplace. So you can get it down pretty darn close, yeah. But we're not in the 100% thing, but we feel like this bill takes us a long way towards stopping those inadvertent and therefore expensive and life-upsetting mistakes, and that ability to mark the rosters is really crucial for our work.
Okay. Mr. Chair, the Secretary sparked a couple more questions. In the voting book on Election Day, if somebody's marked a felon, are the election judges going to be informed to discreetly tell these people you can't vote, or are they going to allow them to vote and then call the police? I mean, what's the deal here? I mean, because I can see that happening.
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Secretary.
It's not that discreet, and it said, I see your challenge. It says that you are currently a felony and you're not yet off paper. And that does happen, and people turn around and leave.
Okay.
Occasionally, when it's a Jim Johnson or Tom Johnson or Paul Johnson or Paul Peterson.
Or Sheldon.
That is not me. To election judges, there's a conversation, and if somebody is willing to sign an oath that swears I'm not that Paul Johnson, but then that goes for investigation.
Okay.
So there's a procedure. It's awkward. Okay. It's the way it is.
And one last follow-up, Mr. Chair. My understanding is the Secretary of State is going to notify people when they're eligible. Is that correct, Representative Benson, or is it going to be the Department of Corrections? Or both?
Or Secretary Richards?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gautier, there's a partnership with Community Corrections, which is the main communication vehicles, the corrections, the courts, our department. We have, set aside money for the notification of it that you're not. We need to work out this system.
Mr. Chair and members, the bill would require that before each state general election, in addition to notifying people who shouldn't be voting that they can't, that we also notify people who have completed their felony sentences in the previous 2 years that they are now welcome to vote.
Mr. Chair, Representative Benson, I'd like to probably go offline and talk about maybe an amendment come to stake of about the Department of Corrections also fulfilling that responsibility.
They would have some responsibility in maintaining some records and having a notification in terms of that their rights have been restored,
yeah,
because they've completed it.
But they don't do a very good job, so I'd like to talk about that.
Thank you.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Question for the Secretary or Representative Benson, the author. In the House research, it states that some of the responsibilities will fall on the local government units, especially county attorneys, and the mandates will follow. Just wondering if there's a cost to that, and then what the estimate of the cost of the counties are.
Representative Benson.
Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald. Right now, the costs fall almost exclusively on the county attorney, and they have very little flexibility, and so they have brought forward part of the language that's in here to allow them to more effectively deploy their resources. There is a fiscal note for some of this, but we have a representative here from the County Attorneys Association who who might be able to be more precise than I can be about that particular question, if that would be okay.
Sure. I might add, Mr. Chairman, that the counties are present in the Election Integrity Task Force also.
Mr. Kingery, did you want to shed some light on the issue? State your name and title. And
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is John Kingery, speaking on behalf of the Minnesota County Attorneys Association. I'd like to respond to your question, Representative McDonald, and maybe make some a few other brief comments as well. First, at their meeting last month, Minnesota County Attorneys Association Board of Directors supported the report of the interim reports of the Task Force on Election Integrity. Some of those require additional research, some of those require legislative changes, which is what you have before you, and some of them require non-legislative changes, such as putting signs up in voting areas, which I think will also help. You know, if you're a felon, you can't vote. To your point, Representative McDonald, we believe with these changes, and many of them were incorporated in Representative Kelly's bill last year, we believe that this notification and sharing of information will result in fewer felons voting and ultimately result in fewer county dollars being spent. And so that's our belief. We are supporting the provisions within the bill. And I know there's been some discussion on Section 4 with regarding the investigation and the charging. We do believe that law enforcement is the most appropriate entity to do these investigations. If the county attorney is doing the investigating, it puts them in conflict. They do the investigation, then they do the prosecution. It's sort of left hand, right hand. Law enforcement are not the agents, as much as some people may believe. They're not the agents of the county attorney, so we can't direct them to conduct an investigation. And many of our folks believe that that would be an ethical violation should we do that. In addition, we are supporting changing the standard from the American Bar Association to the rules that have been promulgated by the National District Attorneys Association. It's a 91-page document which directs the conduct of prosecutors across the country. We believe that is a more appropriate standard. When we first started this discussion with Representative Kelly, our recommendation was to remove Section 4 altogether, that provision in statute, and he wisely counseled us not to do that. And so, and put in place the American Bar Association standards. Again, we believe the national prosecution standards are more appropriate. They list the factors in terms of screening cases that are brought to them and factors that go into the charging decision, which is what guides our decisions in every other screening and charging offense that is brought to our attention. This is the only part in state statute that requires us to conduct investigation and requires us to prosecute. And again, we believe with this bill, with these changes in Section 4, with the data exchange that takes place, we do believe that this will result in fewer felons voting and as a result, fewer county dollars being expended to enforce tracking down a very small number of individuals that voted. And many of these vigils, I might comment, believe that they could vote. The Citizens for Election Integrity released a study about 15 months ago in which they reviewed the cases that they had on file at that time. They conducted interviews with county attorney offices, and one of the things that we found is these folks thought they could. It was just simply a misunderstanding. We believe this does go a long way toward correcting the problem. But like anything else in life, for those of you that have been in the military before, you get out and you get a stack of papers like that, good luck knowing what's in there. But again, we believe this is a step in the right direction and look forward to future discussions on this issue.
Okay. We don't have anybody else on the list right now. Anybody else want to testify in favor or opposition? Mr. Haas. Haas? Haas. Sorry about that. Go ahead, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Thank you. My name is Mark Hazi. I'm the Vice President of the Council on Crime and Justice, a Minneapolis nonprofit organization. We are also members of the Minnesota Second Chance Coalition, a coalition of over 55 Minnesota organizations. I have just a brief comment to make. We don't oppose this legislation. We don't support it. If we were to oppose it, it would be just because there's a simpler, cheaper, and better way to deal with this issue. You may have heard some discussions. I know the task force discussed what's now being called the North Dakota model, which actually 13 different states have this model of dealing with felon voting, and that's to allow people who are on community supervision, even if they've committed a felony, to vote. So North Dakota does that, and plus 12 other states. In other words, we're not advocating for people who will go to prison or have jail are spending jail time on their felony offense to vote, but those who are already in the community, we're trying to, as a state, we've already decided that through our sentencing guidelines, it's better for them to stay in the community, have jobs, pay taxes, support their families. To your comment, Representative Johnson, we also believe that allowing people to vote when they're in the community can be empowering, and some research has shown that it can actually reduce recidivism. And then we wouldn't have to spend money on notification, we wouldn't have to spend money on prosecutions, we just believe it's a cheaper, simpler, and better way to deal with this issue. I realize that some people may have some disagreement with whether the punishment is appropriate or not. And I think that's a legitimate argument that, you know, there should be some, this could be part of the punishment. But on that note, I want to also give one statistic, which is since 1982, the percentage of Minnesotans who have been, who now cannot vote because of a felony conviction has increased 500%. And that's because we've created more felony sentences and we've created longer sentences. So compared to 1982, this law removes the right to vote for 500% more Minnesotans. Those are my only comments. We don't oppose this legislation exactly. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Any other questions or comments? If not, the chair will renew his motion on House File 2327 be recommended pass as amended and move to state government finance. Any questions, comments? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you, sir. Representative Benson, you have the next bill up. Members, this is a bill that's been before us and we passed on to the floor, right, Representative Benson?
That's
and
correct.
There were some technical changes, not substantive, but some problems with the language that we want to take up. So, Representative Benson, do you have an amendment? Well, first of all, we should move your bill. The chair will move House File 1816. Be recommended to pass and move back to the General Register. Representative Benson, you want to introduce your amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, the DE2 amendment that you should have before you. I'm going to explain why I needed to have this amendment.
Put your amendment on first and get it the shape if you want it, and then we'll
explain
it. The chair would offer the DE2 amendment to House File 1816 to get it in the proper form that the author wants it. Without any objection, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, Representative Benson, explain your amendment, please.
Well, this was a freshman mistake in terms of believing that we could do a delete all, and I guess that's not proper form to do a delete all on the House floor. So I asked for it to be re-referred to the committees, and so I could more properly explain to the committee and the whys to it. I still assert that this is really about a jobs bill. I know that we had thorough discussions about all of it, but what I wanted to bring it back for is that where we had placed the new language before under subdivision 2, it came into direct conflict with a permission that we already grant to individuals have by the state of Minnesota and federal have the right to possess them because they're collectors of art and are museums. So they're very limited number, but they became very outspoken in terms of the way we had positioned the language that it would suddenly make them illegal to have or possess these devices, the silencers that we mentioned in the bill. So what I needed to do is to have the bill changed. It wasn't possible. It would have been very complicated and convoluted to try to to leave it in that section and accommodate their issues and do what we wanted the bill to do. So I needed to delete all so that we could move it up into the proper area on the bill. So we've had lots of discussions about it already. It's not any different. The language has not changed. It's just repositioning to make sure that these people who can already legally have them will be able to maintain that. The only thing that I would add is one of the things that came up during our testimony, I had individuals up here before, is that we have had discussions with the County Sheriff's Department, the Sheriff's Association, Minnesota Sheriff's Association, and I have confirmation from their executive director that they have no objections to the bill. It's, you know, it's like anything in terms of trying to get a letter that says, you know, we thoroughly support it. They don't, but by the mere fact that they don't object to the bill, we have their support. So I want to make sure that we have their support. Frame it a different way. It's not that we have a letter of support, but they have no objections, and I leave it at that, and you understand what that means. So that's where I'm at and why I'm back here today, simply to make sure that I protected those individuals that already have rights to possess these. Because with that smile, Mr. Chairman, do I understand that maybe Mr. Franklin is sitting behind me today or no?
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
Got the horns up. Okay, Representative Benson, questions from members. This is a bill we saw before. Any questions? Representative Johnson.
Maybe you could speak it again. Thank you, Mr. Chair. More directly, too, I see that you removed Section D from the original bill, stating nothing in the section intended to allow for personal usage of devices. I assume that was in there for a specific reason, but it's not in the delete all amendment. What's the thinking on that?
Representative Benson, was this a section that you said inadvertently prohibited people who are already legal to have them and ran into trouble?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, it did.
That's the portion that we did what it didn't want it to do. People are already legal and made illegal, so we wanted to go back to the original one. Representative Johnson, any?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And these people that already have these are collectors? Can you say a little bit more about that?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Yes, they are. They're collectors. Some of these are considered fine art. Many of these devices are 100 years old, and they're collected for museum purposes. They do some rotation in and out of museums and firearm museums and the like. But they already have permission. They established permission from the state government and federal government to possess these things. They're very valuable. In fact, many of these are so rare that they're worth actually more than the firearm that they attach to.
Okay. All right. Yes, Representative Mirani.
Sure. So just along with Representative Johnson's question then, so I get that answer. So you currently have a body of people. You don't want to do harm to their current rights relative to new legislation. However, for the record, is there nothing then, does the proposed bill then create a whole new set of rights for anyone other than those identified in the bill itself?
Representative Benson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. What the bill does is it allows for manufacturers and dealers and importers to possess them for the express ability to be able to sell to law enforcement and DNR, and that's already in the statute in terms of, so we had testimony of a separate bill. So there's a manufacturer in the state of Minnesota that manufactures weapons and sells quite a bit to the military, but because of our current statute, he's not able to manufacture to specifications for the military, for example, and test them there in on his premises, because we make that illegal. It is really all about a jobs bill. In fact, I am aware of the fact that if this law does not pass, that this individual is very seriously considering moving the 17 jobs to the state of Wisconsin, because they have the ability to be able to possess these and test them so that they can sell them to military and law enforcement. We have a number of firearm manufacturers in the state. and this could give them an ability they don't have now.
Mr. Chair,
and
thank you again for reminding me the bill, and I think there's probably more agreement on that. But you know, at the last hearing, we heard from individuals who came forward and said, I just want these things, and there were I think two individuals came and offered that testimony, and they didn't identify themselves as collectors of antiques or they just want them. And, so, I'm just trying to do due diligence here in terms of the language. Is there anything in this language that would confer a new right to a whole new group of people other than those who are currently covered and will be covered explicitly, the individuals you just described? Mm-hmm. Is there a new right that's being conferred here to other folks?
Representative Benson.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Mariani, what the bill does is just gives the rights to dealers to be able to possess for the purpose of. The individuals that were here are both federal firearm class 3 dealers, and they already have some relationship. In fact, in testimony, I had a letter from a member of the Olmstead Sheriff's Department who does the purchasing, and about his desire for the department to be able to work with these individuals and for them to be able to possess these devices. It prohibits the average person, if you will, from owning a device like this. And so their intent was, I just want one. That wasn't the intent at all, and that's not where the bill goes. The average person that does not have a dealer's license still will be prohibited from owning these. And even when you sell these to the police department, the DNR, they have very express instructions about how those are to be used. So they're very limiting. To understand that all these people that will have the ability to sell, they go through rigorous background checks from the federal government, and of which the state has records of. So this won't be the average person off the street being able to possess.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr.
Bonson,
it's vitally important that we have that on the record, so thank you.
You bet.
Okay. If there's no more questions, comments, Chair will renew the motion for House File 1816 to recommend it to pass as amended and move back to the General Register. Comments, questions, hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Okay, thank you, Representative Benson.
When's the next hearing?
Thursday. Thursday, March 8th is our next meeting at 10:15. Any questions? If not, meeting adjourned. Thank you.